I'm Peggy Pirro, and this is Food From Here. I think it's fair to say that anyone who attended the Franklin Street Bazaar when it first opened in 2014 could sense something different was happening on the lawn of the West Branch Library. Yes, it was and is a farmer's market, and also a craft fair with yoga on the library lawn and chalk drawings on the sidewalk and banners and color and music and food and a vibe that says, this is what we do on Saturday mornings. My guest on this episode of Food From Here has been the Bazaar's market manager since 2018, but he was involved as a volunteer pretty much from the start. Tom Leggett readily admits that his knowledge of farmers and farming was a bit limited at the start, but he embodies the principle that we should always be learning. He also brings a professional's approach to communication and attention to detail to the work of running Evansville's most popular weekly outdoor market. Tom also writes about food trucks for News For You. And near the end of our conversation, we talk about what aspiring food truck operators might want to think about before launching their business, because it's not just about cooking in very close quarters. As always, if you have questions or ideas about this or any of our episodes, you can send an email to foodfromhere@wnin.org. Now, here's my conversation with Tom Leggett of the Franklin Street Bazaar. Tom Leggett, welcome to Food From Here.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Let's start out by talking about the Franklin Street Bazaar.
That's my favorite subject.
Yeah. Let's get a little history to get going. Last year was their 10th anniversary, or maybe the 11th?
About 11th, okay. Or 10th or 11th for somewhere right there. But yeah, so.
I remember that first season of the Bazaar because it was a very different kind of farmer's market that was being created.
I think so. You know, a traditional farmer's market is farmers and food. And that's why I think it's so important that we differentiate ourselves and say we are a bazaar, because we're not just the food. We are yoga in the morning. We're music played throughout. We have live musicians. So I think a lot of those, and especially our vendors. Our vendors are all makes and, you know, they're all from within 70 miles of Evansville. They're all, for the majority of them, making their own products and creating their own things. So I think that's what really sets the bazaar apart from a traditional farmer's market.
It still has the social elements, of course, but there was just something colorful and alive about the entire endeavor that kind of set it apart that first year and made it, I think, something that people were intrigued by.
I've always said that to me, and I've been there since the beginning as a volunteer, so that kind of helped me step into my current role. But it's a real breathing machine. It's not even a machine. It's just a real breathing person or
ecosystem.
That's what I thrive on. I love that.
You came on board as the market manager in 2018.
Yep, 2017, 2018 is about when that transition took place.
Yeah. And I believe that makes you the longest running market manager to date for the Bazaar.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
On that.
We've had some great people before, though.
Absolutely. I'm sure you've learned a lot. So, you know, tell me what you know now that you wish you would have known when you came aboard.
So traditionally, I've not been interested in the farming aspect or the agricultural aspect of it. So I've had to do a lot of learning about understanding, you know, seasons. Admittedly, I'm just like a lot of our customers that go to groceries. I mean, our patrons that go to groceries, they don't understand there are such things as seasons. So getting familiarized with that concept took me a little bit to understand and respect. But I have so much more respect for the farmers, the people that produce. They put their heart and soul into it, and it's really important that I make sure that comes through in everything that the product that the bazaar is, you know, what everything we produce, that everybody understands its heart and soul and community. And I think that's a lot of the really big aspects of what we do.
Do you think the farmers are the primary draw?
That's a loaded question.
maybe I should rephrase.
No, it's a fair question though. Okay. I think initially the farmers were the initial draw. But the bazaar, in my opinion, has evolved to where people have certain expectations of what it's about. They know that, yes, I can absolutely go there and get to the freshest vegetables on the freshest produce on the planet. So that is definitely a draw. But, you know, we have people that come for the food trucks, and we have people that come to do yoga in the morning. So all those things go together, and I think it makes it just a really strong reason to go down and explore and get involved. And one of my favorite things I tell people is, it is the community to me, is to go in the middle of the bazaar, close your eyes, and listen to the noise. You hear people laughing, giggling, talking, and conversing with each other, not looking at a device or playing on their phones, that sort of thing. They're talking to the producers. They're genuinely interested. And those producers, the people that create, are genuinely interested in the patrons. And I think that's a beautiful conglomeration of all this cool stuff. And like I said, when you close your eyes and you just listen, it's like, to me, it's music to my ears. So it's just really beautiful.
I think anytime you can get people to look up
from their phones. Yes, absolutely. In today's day and age, absolutely. It's a positive thing. There's no negative reason to be there. I mean, you're wanting the feels. I said a lot of what the bazaar is about for me is to make sure that we are selling those feels to the patrons. But I don't have to do much selling. It does itself. I mean, that's the beauty of it.
Do you recognize patrons from year to year?
Oh, absolutely. And you see their kids grow. And that's a really cool thing. Mm-hmm. And you see the same people. And I'll see them out in public. They go, I know you from somewhere. And then like, oh, you're on the Franklin Street Bazaar. That is such a really cool thing. And I'm just blessed because I get the work in it, right? And I get a lot of direct contact. And I met some amazing individuals between our vendors and our patrons. But, you know, just every person has a story. And I think that's one of our jobs, is to tell that story. So, yeah.
Say some more about that.
You know, every vendor, whether it be a farmer or somebody that crochets or somebody that makes clothing or, you know, makes wreaths. I mean, it doesn't matter. They all have a story and a reason to be down there. You know, whether it's something, it's a silly hobby I got into. And then one day I was like, hey, you know what? I can make money doing this. Or, you know, I was going through a really dark time in my life. Maybe I was ill. And, you know, I learned to pick this up as something to take my mind off it. And then it became its own animal. We have had businesses that have formed as brick and mortars. Be Happy is one of our biggest success stories. Be Happy Pie Company.
Yeah.
They were originally producing their pies and bringing them down to the market to sell. Well, and, you know, she came from that world where it was just an experiment, and it just kept growing and growing and growing. And they finally said, let's pull the trigger and try this in real life. And they put, not real life, but, you know, and I think that's a beautiful thing. But there's other people, like I said, that have been gone through illness and things like that. And it's just a great story. But every one of those people down there has a story. I have 90 different stories, 90 different personalities, you know, so I think that's what's really cool about it.
Do you have the same vendors every year? Do you have an influx of new?
I always give the option to the existing vendors to come back to the next season. But that's always supplemented by new folks because attrition happens. People, mm-hmm. they're, you know, like, I'm getting old. I need to kind of take a breather on this. Or, you know what? I want my weekends back because the bazaar is a commitment. I mean, you're looking at 13 weekends. Now, I don't expect them to be there every weekend. I like it. But so that's the nice thing about getting new blood in there, because there's always something like a little pop of excitement when somebody new comes. However, I think that a lot of people, and that's something I'd like a lot of people to know, is they're like, you've never let me come. And I'm like, it's not that I don't want to let you come, but I can't have four or five of the same product type, right? So I feel responsible, and I feel like it's important to my vendors and my farmers that I don't get so many things that they start smothering each other. And it's not a good arrangement for either, because if you get too many of, let's say, bread, that's a good example. I have five separate bread bakers. Well, eventually it's going to be a part where they start, you know, you start not selling as much or as good. And, you know, my wife and other vendors have said, it's okay to bring other people in, Tom. You can try. And my wife has been really good about, like, why aren't you trying them? And I like, oh, it's just, it's, but it's a hard thing. It's because it's like your family, you know, it's a weird, I call it the big dysfunctional family that works. And so.
Yeah. Do you have a date for this year's market open?
Sure. We start May 28th. That's the last Saturday in May. We'll go 2 weeks, and then we take a breather because the Nut Club has their car cruising. And so we've learned that it's just easier to let them have that. And then we'll go all the way to the end of August, so the last Saturday in August. And that gives us about 13 Saturdays.
So yoga will be back?
Oh, yoga will be back. They go from 9 in the morning, 9:45. They still keep trying to get me to come and do it. And I can't bring myself to it. Fortunately, I have a bunch of other things to do usually in the morning, so I can avoid that. But no, the yoga is really awesome. And, you know, that was always fun to me, because the first year I got involved, I didn't really notice it, but then I started noticing more and more. And the first time you walk out there, and there's all these people laying on the ground doing these poses, and you're like, what just happened here? And then you realize, oh, they're doing yoga. So they're there from 9 to 9:45, and of course we'll have our musical entertainment, which we try to always have a local musician or musicians from 10 to 1, and we do have some special events throughout the season that we try to bring in. So we're getting all those ironed out.
Do you pay your musicians?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. I believe that fair pay. I don't believe in exposure.
People die from exposure.
I really believe that. And that sounds wrong, but to me, they're as important as one of my vendors out there or my farmers. They need to be paid for their craft. And I think that's important.
Food trucks.
Oh, yeah. We've got them.
You usually have...
Between 5 and 7 different food trucks. A lot of them have been staples throughout ever since the beginning, and they do well there, and we try to make sure they do well there. So, to me, we have some of the best in the city. So, and that's a lot of fun. And it's always a good draw for crowds, to be quite frank.
Yeah.
A lot of people, you know, they use that excuse, hey, let's go down to the bazaar, and while we're there, let's get some lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for coming. So. Yeah.
Weekly themes, activities. Do you schedule those or do you just let things?
Sometimes things happen naturally, and sometimes the best opportunities pop up by accident. Like we've had people, hey, we like to do some belly dancing. Can we? I'm like, sure, why not? Let's try that out. I think.
Is that a real example or did you just?
That's a real example.
And how did that work out?
It was fun. The kids got involved with the belly dancers and they tried to get me. I got a belly and I was like, I'm not doing that. But it was a really good time. But then we also do theme things. Like we try to do neighborhood days. And so we bring all the neighborhood associations together and let them have a day there.
Nice.
We do kids day bazaars, which we usually do some kind of not a treasure hunt. What is that called? A scavenger hunt.
Yeah.
And so we do a scavenger hunt. And then if they get all their passport stamps, for instance, we give them like last season and probably this season too, we give them a free scoop of ice cream and milk and sugar. So that we've, and that's the other thing. We have a lot of really good community sponsors. First Federal Savings Bank is our primary event sponsor. And quite frankly, without them, we couldn't do all the fun stuff that we do. So
right. They've been with you for a long time.
They have. And for instance, West Side Nut Club, on the other hand, has sponsored our Kids Day activity. So that's always been, we've had good sponsors and good help.
One of the things that, of course, is the draw is the social aspect of coming to the market and seeing people, you know, meeting, as you said, maybe meeting for lunch or picking up some, or just poking around, doing some browsing and so forth. Over the years, have you noticed certain types of activities foster that and others don't? Or do you not try to manage too much about the social aspect?
I think the social aspect will take care of itself if you're giving them the tools to do its job. Giving them a venue, giving them one of our biggest blessings is we have a awesome venue. It's a traditional hub and spoke design. You know, it's the library, it's the West Branch Library lawn. And it's a very, we've always been blessed with a beautiful venue, but giving people the tools to talk to those folks and to socialize, just if you put it there, they'll take advantage of it. Mm-hmm. And we've never had, knock on wood, we've never had any negative instances of that. If anything, it's been fostering and loving. And just like I said, it's just a big family down there. And I think, and that's one of my favorite things about the whole thing. And the sales will come because of that. If you have people that are having positive thoughts and believe in the product and understand home-based business and small business for that matter, people want to support local, and that's a great place to do it. And it's a great place for those folks to cut their teeth and see if they can make it in the real world. So I tell people, a lot of people are like, well, they're not going to sell very good. I said, that's what this is. It's a great experiment, right? You go out there, and if it makes it, it makes. And if you don't, you don't. But one of the things in our vendor meetings I stress is if your product or your produce is not selling, change it. It's quite frankly, that's the market system, right? There is either demand or there's not. You got to figure it out. Sorry, I get off on tangents.
No, tangents are good. Tangents are what a conversation is. Yeah. I didn't grow up there, but I lived in Southern California for a long time, and I
that was my introduction to farmers markets, which spoiled me. As you can imagine,
sure.
The season is pretty much year round, and the farmers markets are really big. And I was in Los Angeles, so there were many, and all of them were large. There were, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people. They're blessed in California with so many farms and so many different products, and we don't have that here.
Right.
We have fewer farms, fewer vegetable farms, and it was my observation that the farmers could get a little spread out here with the varying farmers markets that we're trying to establish over the last 20 years or so. And I wonder what your experience has been trying to get a critical mass of farmers weekly and committed.
Right.
Over the course of the year. Newburgh, for example, had to suspend its farmers market in part because they were tearing up their street, but in part right. because it was hard to get that critical mass of farmers to commit to doing a season. What's your experience with that?
I think it could potentially—one, we kind of talked about earlier, oversaturation. I don't want to oversaturate too many producers or farmers. And so we had to really carefully balance that, because here's the other side of that, right? Because I do limit the amount of people I have— usually about 5 or 6 farms are people that make produce and vegetable fruits and vegetables, those sort of things. We take a real risk, because, you know, you can have a bad day and you can have a bad week where the ground's got flooded and everything, you know, you can't get in there and get them out. So that's a real risk. So we've been really lucky, but I've had people call me and say, Tom, I can't make it. We are way short on, and I still have to meet my other obligations, which, let's face it, because of what we are, we're a secondary obligation. That doesn't make me mad. They have a right to survive, and mm-hmm. so they need to prioritize that. But on the same thing, I also, and I battle this back and forth, as you can tell. When do I say, okay, we can have another one in? And I have to really watch to see how those weeks go by, week to week, and see if they're running out of things or if they have a little bit left. Because I feel usually if they have a little bit left over, then we're about the right balance, right? We're not. Mm-hmm. What I don't want to happen is they run out by 10 o'clock, and right. and nobody else can get stuff, right? So we've got a pretty good balance. And a lot of times, I have to trust the farmers. I really have to go to them and go, hey, I'm thinking about adding another producer or another farmer. What do you guys think? And you know what? They're farmers. They're going to give me their opinion.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they're going to give me their opinion. And I value that. And I think that's – we've earned the respect of each other. I think it's important that you establish that respect, because, I mean, I don't know their world. You heard me told you earlier, I wasn't always into the farming side of it. But I think they trust me enough to know that I'm going to trust them. And I'm going to trust that they're not going to try to lead me astray just to profit off what the difference is, right? So – but back to your original question, it's an educated guess for me. It really is. That, and just combining that with their opinions, and we make those choices.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime I'm going to add a vendor that I think may be similar or may undo another vendor, I'll go to them. I'll say, you know, it's a very good example of this is sourdough and bread baking, right? So, you know, I went to all my bread makers. I said, I have somebody who wants to do sourdough. And they're like, oh, you're going to be fine. They said, that's totally different than our product. Mm-hmm. We're comfortable with that. Yeah. Now, if I'd gone to them and said, hey, we got another bread maker coming on, that discussion may have been entirely different.
So, right.
So I think it's just trusting each other. And that's hard to do. That's really hard to do in today's age. I mean, I'm so blessed that I can trust my vendors to give me good opinions and advice. They make me look good.
Do you have any kind of a end of the day system with your farmers? I know they've been experimenting with this at the Wednesday market downtown, where what doesn't sell can be utilized in some way. Somebody will come in and buy up a farmer's product and take it somewhere.
So there's been a couple tries, and they've all been experiments. Like I said, sure. That's the beauty of a small market like this. You can experiment and try, and if it works, great. If it doesn't, don't do it again. Originally, we had a basket that would go around and everybody would put their leftovers in. And I think we would take it down to, and this is a little bit, because I wasn't part of this process, but I believe we took it to the not the homeless shelter, but one of the shelters around mm-hmm. here, and let them redistribute that. So they tried that, and it did work. The problem is you have to make it convenient or people won't do it. I mean, it's a real thing, right? It's a great idea, but if you can't make it so it's convenient your volunteers won't do it because they're like, I'm not going to go out of my way, you know, so you have to make it. So we've tried that, but we've also had success in one of our Amish farmers. When they have leftovers, they will actually take their trailer down and unload their additional merchandise there because they don't want to take it back either because, you know, they've already spent their time on, so it's a great place for them to stop. So yes, we've had a little bit of that. Mm-hmm. I would like to see more of that.
Mm-hmm.
But logistic-wise, it's hard to, it's challenging.
What would it take?
I think it would take a consistent volunteer base.
Mm-hmm.
I've learned one thing about volunteers. I love my volunteers when I have them, but consistency is key for me because if I can't depend on that person being there every time, and I'm really anal retentive about that. I you know, if you're telling me you're going to be somewhere, I expect to be there the same way as I expect myself. And the consistency is key. You have to have somebody, and usually you have to have somebody that's driving that.
A coordinator, a volunteer,
somebody that's gung-ho about it.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to balance that out with not wearing them out because let's face it, volunteerism is a dying art right now. You either use your volunteers or you don't, but what you don't want to do is burn out a volunteer because they'll never come back. That's the way I feel about it. And mm-hmm. I also feel that way if you don't utilize your volunteers effectively. And this is why I'm coming back to this. If you don't utilize your volunteers effectively, they walk. If they don't feel like they're needed, they're going to walk. So I personally would have to have volunteers that feel like they're needed, which they are needed, but that are consistent. I need to have a consistent system in place where it always happens like clockwork. Mm-hmm. You know, every weekend at 1:30, we take all that extra produce and we drop it off somewhere. But we have to have somebody run with it. And quite frankly, my plate's full enough that I don't feel like I would be a good option for that. So I don't know. It's something to revisit for sure. And it probably needs to be done because we do have food, definitely some food issues around here. I mean, everywhere. So, yeah. And that's something else I've learned. I didn't understand SNAP and WIC and mm-hmm. all those benefit programs. And so it's been a really eye-opening experience to see people really do leverage those.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, it made me realize I'm kind of selfish. And I just assumed that all that stuff happened, that stuff didn't really exist. But it's really opened my eyes to it. So it's been good.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit more about the volunteers at the market. What do they do?
Typically, if I have volunteers, just for the record, I made the market run so I can run it by myself. But when I have volunteers, what I like them to do is I tell them, you're going to see me at the start and you're going to see me at the end. But here's what I want to happen. At start, I want you to volunteer and help people set up their tents. Because a lot of times, a lot of our vendors and our producers, they don't come with any of their own help. Sometimes they're just setting up on their own. And that's really intimidating. Because it's a stress bucket at first. The first two or three markets are where you really sow your oats. And you're like, oh my God, what have I done? And it's okay. We want to be there to calm them down. We want to be the smoothing of that wave. And so we make sure they have the appropriate help when they're setting up. And during the market day, I know it sounds silly, but trash.
Yeah, no, it doesn't sound silly. It's
keeping the park
very important.
My goal when we leave that the West Branch Library lawn is that it's cleaner than when we started. It should always be cleaner. We should always leave places better than we found them. And so, you know, the running joke is I said, if you start seeing trash pop up out of a can, you need to grab that can and put a new one in there because I promise you that most folks will just keep piling stuff on that can and then it's a big mess. So,
yeah.
But so that, and I encourage them to go interact with our
with the vendors?
Yes, because we have a lot of younger volunteers, because a lot of times they're doing service hours for their school. Like we've had a lot of signature school kids. And I think that interaction with a real live human being mm-hmm. that's down there trying to make money, when they see that, they understand, they get the bigger picture. I think our job is to educate just as much as we need the help, right? We need to make, I hate the term, but we used to use it at edutainment, right? I think you should be entertainment. It is a terrible term, but it's accurate. We should always be educating. And most of the times the education comes when you don't even realize it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when they interact with those people, they're like, oh, these are real people. And a lot of times those vendors will call them back up. And so towards teardown, that's the same thing that happens in reverse. Now we clear out the market and we make sure it's all clean. All the cans are back. All the cones are up. I mean, you know, but our eye is on safety at all times. Mm-hmm. So if there's a limb in the, just little things, like I explained to them, hey, there's a limb there. Somebody trips over that. We're liable. So I say, you know, we have to be really careful of that stuff. So I want you to clean that up. But and they're like, oh, I didn't even think about it like that. I said, great. You learned something. I mean, that's the beauty of it. I love it. I learn stuff from them. You learn a lot about their background. And like I said, you need to I've really had to learn to take a walk in somebody else's shoes. Because we do get volunteers down there. They're like, you're going to buy my lunch? I didn't know. And I do buy all my volunteers lunch. I value their time just as much as they value mine. So, and it's important because your volunteers need to know that they matter. Because I volunteer for things and I'm like, well, why did I even come down here?
Yeah.
So, and one of my biggest troubles is trying to keep them busy because a lot of the stuff we do is just upkeep. We're not, it's not, you're not physically doing this. You're on your way through. And it's nice because down there, when you're volunteering, you can walk around and go listen to music for a little bit, sit down, like I said, eat lunch or whatever. And we just try to make it fun for each other. So.
Do you do an orientation for them or is it just like
do usually,
trial by fire?
Well, because again, volunteers and consistency is tricky, right? So we don't always have the same volunteers. So a lot of times it's just the first 15 minutes I can pretty much explain things. And we run into each other and I give them my cell phone number, of course, if they have questions. But normally I'll run into them throughout the day and I'll pull them over and say, hey, let's try doing this or that sort of thing. So, yeah.
Yeah, good.
But I love volunteers. Like I said, if you're an organization that has volunteers, you treat them right or you'll lose them.
Yeah.
It's really that simple.
Can people sign up on your website?
I will usually put, about a month before, I will put a Google form basically, and then go in there and pick out the dates and times they want. And sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. But I've done a lot of work with the market to make it so I can manage it by myself. It's just always nice to have somebody else, especially when it's 90 degrees outside.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So. Although that's a nice relatively shady spot that you have.
We've been blessed with trees and every storm we have, I'm always like, oh, please don't take out that tree.
Don't take that tree.
Yeah.
What's your relationship with the library there?
We have a great relationship. They like to do kids projects, which is perfect. It's great fit. And it's nice because they'll occasionally have projects outside, but most of theirs are inside. And I know that sounds silly, but that's great because a lot of those people don't realize that library even exists.
I know.
And, you know, they go in there like, this was great. And
it's
they
a
come.
Beautiful little library.
It's the cutest little library you've ever seen. I didn't realize it had a twin brother or a twin sister. There's another one that looks identical, and I just didn't realize that. And, but no, they always call and they say, hey, when your kid's day or, you know, we're going to do these projects. I'm like, go for it. The more you can encourage them. And also, it works out naturally as a nice place to get cool. And so it's a great, because let's face it, it gets hot sometimes. And it's a great reprieve from all the hot temperatures. They can go in there, take a little bit of a breather, and get kind of re-energized and go back outside ready to go again. So.
Farmers markets, in my time here in southern Indiana, the farmers markets have kind of had a spotty history. They come and they go. Some have not been really true to the spirit of a farmers market. I don't know enough to know if that's typical of other cities, especially small cities like sure. Evansville. On kind of a meta level, we've talked a little bit about this, but what do you think makes a market work well and what creates problems?
I think setting expectations goes a long way. And when I say that, I know that personally, I need to guarantee them or give them something, right? So they need to know that I'm sincere in my efforts and what I'm doing. But I think there's a lot of pillars, right? And the first pillar is environment or location, 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 location. As much as I don't like it, I found myself, like I said, our library is one of our best assets, that lawn. But I've been to other markets where they're on concrete. And I know that sounds harsh, but it's true. Do you want to go into a blacktop drive when it's, even when it's 70 degrees, that's a hot drive, right? So location first, or is a big one. Setting expectations with your farmer. Don't go, oh, we're going to have this many people. I'm not sure what we're going to have, but I guarantee you I'll make it right. You know what I mean? If we're not having a good day, you know, we'll talk it out. And I think that the communication's key. One of the biggest drivers for people that have come to us and said, hey, I think this person would really like to come to this market or this bazaar. Market bazaar. but is because when I talked to them, I said, what's one of your reasons why you're wanting to leave? Because I've had people leave other markets before to come and request to come to Franklin. And we sit down because I want to know what their intentions are. Because was it just, oh, we weren't doing that great or, you know, I got in arguments. I want them to be honest with me. And 90% of the time, it's communication. All you got to do is let somebody know something, but you need to let them know something. And most of my vendors will tell you I'm anal about communication. I expect you should always know that you can reach out to me or vice versa. Or I always set the expectation that the night before the bazaar, you're going to have all the details for the following day. So every Friday morning or Friday by 8 o'clock, rather eight at night, I send out a communication. This is who's doing yoga today. This is who our entertainment is going to be. But I think consistency, mm-hmm. you need to be consistent. And I think that that kills a lot of markets. They keep changing over and over again, and they're not consistent with their vendors. And I think that vendors get gun shy of that, and they lose their energy. I mean, they have all this energy that they want. They're gung-ho, and then you just kill them because you keep not setting the expectation, or you keep changing the goalposts, as my friends used to call it. You change the goalposts to keep moving it. And but like I said, so I think that's what sucked a lot of the energy out. And that people are so familiar with a grocery now. Let's face it, a grocery is convenient. Although we all know that, you know, a lot of local grown produce is 10 times better. But the other thing is, I think people look at things that come from farms, they're usually not as pretty as what you can find at the grocery, and getting them over past that mindset of what the product looks like, I think that takes a little bit. And so that's one of the things I'd like to do, is have more cooking demos and things like that, using products, and so they can see how they can use this tomato that doesn't look perfect, or, you know, that sort of thing.
I wanted to touch briefly on what happened during the pandemic, which kind of feels like a long time ago, and it also feels like we never really recovered 100% from those couple of years that we were dealing with. Now, of course, it was the 2020. That was when everything shut down in March of 2020. And then the following year was when we had the vaccine, and so people were starting to come back to events. And, of course, outdoor events were preferable to indoor
sure.
events, so that helped. But I'm wondering if you could just talk a little bit about what that was like to deal with something that was so out of left field and unexpected. And did you feel like you were just going to get derailed after several successful years? Where was your head in that?
When I went personally, it was hard. I'm a person that's a busybody anyway. And I was like, first I was like, what am I going to do on Saturdays? No, but the real issue for me was, what is it going to do to all these producers? What is it going to do to our vendors? And are they going to be scared? Because, you know, we knew we couldn't do it when we couldn't do it, right? I mean, there was no way around it. It's out of our hands. So that was rough, because I'm a little bit of a control freak. And so to have that completely just removed and I can't do anything with it was a really weird feeling personally. And then came the questions. So you have your general public starting to ask the questions. Then you have your vendors asking questions. And you know what? They're all good questions, and they're reasonable. None of us had a clue what was going to happen, right?
So no answers.
So I realized that once we started stepping back in, like you said, I guess that would be 21 when vaccines really started coming out, I made some decisions, and we're going to stick to the law, the CDC guidelines. And so we made signs, and we put, I almost said tons of liquor. We put tons of alcohol out throughout the market so people could wash up.
Yeah.
But we set, it did help do some things for me in regards to getting organized. You know, we had to cut entertainment. I did not want anywhere where people could gather. So no yoga. I know that sounds weird. I didn't want groups of people to be all together. So yoga was taken out for that season. Entertainment was taken out because I didn't want places where people could conjugate.
Mm-hmm.
Conjugate? That's not the word.
Congregate.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Can we just take that part out?
We'll conjugate our verbs.
Lordy. This is why I did not do English. But no. But what we did do is then spread out the vendors we had. I didn't add any vendors. And we spread them out by a whole booth space, which I felt was comfortable. And a lot of it was educating the public. Don't grow up and grab produce. Ask the farmer to give you the produce and set it up. Pay with credit card instead of cash. I mean, just, you know, some of those things. And so we did that. And you know what? People were dying to get back out. They were dying. It was, to me, it was like this reverse boom of people came. And I was like, the first day was really nerve-wracking for me, because I didn't know if anybody come out or if I'd be scared to death.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because we were one of the first people to try it, it actually went way better than expected. And so after the first two or three, I was like, maybe that was just a fluke because, you know, people were getting out just to get out. But you know what? They stayed. However, I think that also, and this is true of COVID everywhere, you know, it really killed the small business. It really, if you were a small shop and you were struggling, you were done. If you're already struggling, you're done. And fortunately, most of my businesses I deal with are home-based so that, you know, they could kind of scale themselves back and they could fix it. But, you know, it was still rough.
Yeah, you still need an income.
Yeah, you still need an income. So it was different, though. It was I don't really want to go through it ever again.
No.
And I know everybody else doesn't want to go through it ever again. But now, post-COVID, I think people really cherish their time together outdoors. And so fortunately, the bazaar has really been able to take advantage of that because people love to get out now. And I think they were like, oh, yeah, I'll go out and see you. Now they're like, no, let's go out and do something together and as a family. And I think that's something that actually brought some people together.
Yeah. Don't know what you got till it's gone.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. Your major sponsor is?
First Federal Savings Bank. Yeah. And they've been with us from the beginning. We've been very blessed for them. It allows us to do some things that would be challenging otherwise. They've always been there for me if I have questions or vice versa. I feel like they're a true community supporter, and I think they understand the mission, right? The mission is to bring the community together. Obviously, they have some interest in it, which we all should, but really it's been great having them there. And if you ever go to our bazaar, be sure you stop by their booth, say thank you, and grab a bag and, you know, go shopping.
Let's talk a little bit about the Franklin Street Events Association.
Sure. First of all, they're the host of the event. So Franklin Street Events Association is what originally put together the Franklin Street Bazaar. It's been around for a while. I came in a little bit later into the game, but they have a whole host of things they do host. They did the gumbo cook-off. They do Halloween on Franklin. And they had really large growth too. And they've had very similar things. When COVID came, it kind of readjusted all that, but they've been great to have a lot of the events on Franklin Street. And so I'm very thankful to them because they allowed me to be in charge of what I do, which is the bazaar. So,
So what are you looking forward to seeing on the vendors tables? What's your favorite?
Yes. You're not going to put me in that one. No. I'm a foodie. So I'm always into all the foods. So that's my thing. I love the food. And most of my vendors know if they're actually making a product, chances are I may buy it or I'll bring somebody along that will buy it. So
nice. Now, I know you write for
News For You.
News For You. Thank you.
No problem.
You do a page every.
Everything on wheels.
Yeah. And it's food trucks.
Correct.
Yeah. So how did that come about?
I'm a corporate trainer by trade, so I go out into the field and train people how to use our product as a piece of software. And I'd been to San Francisco for a week, and I was like, whoa, this food truck culture is pretty cool. This is a neat thing. And this is, probably about 10 or 12 years ago. And I got back, and I was like, I'd see them occasionally. And I knew a lot of them just from my association with the bazaar. But I was like, how do you guys find you? Oh, you go to our Facebook page. Well, Facebook page is great unless I don't know that what your food truck name is and all that good stuff. I was like, and I talked to my wife a little bit. I said, I really want to start a food truck page for Evansville. And she goes, well, do it, dummy. And I was like, oh, you know what? I probably could. I was like, yeah, I could do this. I'm an IT guy. I know how to do this stuff. So I established what was called the Evansville food truck page. And we're about 28,000 people, but it's one of those pages that grew by accident.
This is a Facebook page?
It's a Facebook page. Yeah, good. Thanks. Good clarification. And it grew by accident, or it kind of started by accident, and it evolved, and I wasn't expecting it. But what happened was not only were food trucks posting where you could find them in a common place, which was nice, but people were asking where you could find food trucks or who I could get for my event. And I was like, holy cow, this is like all of a sudden this is a great hand. It's yes. A big handshake is what it is. And it was great because the people that were needing these food trucks for their events had a place that they could drop that, and then the food trucks could respond. And of course, the food trucks could respond with where they're going to be. And it was like this self-feeding machine. And so Brian Buxton, which is who owns News For You now, we had talked in passing and stuff like that. And we have some common interest. And if you know, I don't know if you've ever met Brian.
He's been on the show.
He's a trip. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I can tell him that to his face. So I give him a hard time. But he'd ask if I'd ever think about writing something for News For You when he's starting to go down that road. And I said, I don't know. I don't have that kind of time, blah, blah. He goes, you know, all the food trucks, you know, you could do this. I was like, I would want to do it, but I don't want to talk about their food, which was, I said, if I do a food truck article, I don't want to be about the food. I want to be about the people because, again, every person has a story. And so it was great for me to figure out a new way to bring that out. And, you know, and it was good because every one of these food trucks or food truck folks that own them, that's a very personal business. Mm-hmm. There's a lot, you know, I deal with vendors at the bazaar, and it's very similar to that, but the stakes are a lot higher generally in the food truck world. And I thought it would be a great way for people to see the story, how they got there, the heartache they go through, the blood, sweat, and tears that those guys go through. And I thought that was really important to bring that story to light. And so it's been a really good thing for me. It's been a good exercise because I'm not really a writer by trade. I can talk all day, but writing's a different story, as we saw earlier. I started doing that, and I was like, you know what? This is pretty cool. It's kind of fun. It's neat to hear these stories. You know, Peter Liu, which is Chino Taco, was one of my first. Yeah. And the story of hearing him, he was where he came from in China. I mean, it was a really cool story. He came here because he needed to start a different life and just to go through that. And that was really cool. And I was like, everybody's got a story. I mean, and really everybody does. And I think it's important to hear that because as I've gotten older, I've learned I should not judge. And that's the hardest thing to teach anyone, I think, is not be judgy. And I'm judgy, and I admit that. And but doing this has forced me that, you know, you need to look at these things from another side. You know, I have other food trucks. So I'm like, I'm not interested in that, but they told me that their story is amazing. So, and that's not dogging the food truck. It's just not my thing. Mm-hmm. And everybody has their favorite food trucks. And they're like, mm-hmm. Oh, you should do this one. Oh, you should do this one. So the nice thing is the material should be there for a while. And then I think it's also important for lessons to be learned. Like I said, I think everything should somewhat try to educate you because it also tells me that somebody that's thinking about a food truck or thinking about getting in that world, they need to not just think, oh, I'm going to get a truck and I'm going to do this and this and this and this and this. No, you're not going to do this and this and this. You need to be specific. You know, you need to do something that's niche and do what you do and do it well. You don't have to do 50 things. Do 3 things and do them better than anybody in Evansville or anybody. And I think a lot of people lose that message or they assume that, oh, yeah, it's just gas and insurance. No, it's not. It's a commissary. I mean, once they see the business side, and so one of the last articles I did was really covering just the basics. You know, you have to have health permits. You have to have insurance. It's not just fuel. It's you get inspected. I mean, you're going to, you know, a food truck starting is $40,000 if you want to go that route. Or, you know, you're not going to have the right material. I said, marketing is important. Do you have a business plan? You know, what are you going to do when this thing starts rolling good or rolling over on you? So I think it's important because a lot of people jump into that because we all have a dream, but you got to be realistic with it too. You got to ask yourself some hard questions.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of folks, when they start those businesses, and we've seen food trucks come and go, and we've seen small businesses come and go for the same reason. We all have that, but you have to take it farther than what you ever expect. And I think that's where when we see those fail, I wanted to kind of head that off when people get those. I want to have a concise article that says, hey, read this. And quite frankly, with as much information as available on Google and things like that, you should be able to do a lot of this research. And we still see to this day people that don't do the research and take the time before you dump a ton of money into something, you need to make sure. But otherwise, the food truck scene's pretty awesome around here. We got some really
good ones. It's growing.
Yes.
And I don't remember the numbers. Brian, when he came on last spring, the numbers were pretty impressive, the number of trucks that were available, at least throughout the area.
I've made a master list on the food truck, ebbs and food truck page, and we're at about 100. I think we sit around 100, 105, kind of ebbs and flows. Again, things close and things open. So
yeah.
But it's a really exciting, and exciting to see it. And, you know, the folks out at Farm 57 are great. I don't know if you know them. That's a Pizza Revolution.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But they have graciously opened that place up out there to let those. And I tell you what, that's a great place to come. I would say come to the market, come to the bazaar, but I'd also want them to go there too, because they do a great job of promoting the food truck culture and things of that sort.
Yeah. They were really muddy last year.
Oh, yeah.
That was unfortunate.
It was knee deep.
So wet last year that many got canceled. But yes, it's a great.
Yeah.
It's a weekly
thing. And people are excited around it. Yeah. You know, people love it. And I think it's awesome to see it grow how it has.
Yeah. So, I do too.
Yep.
Well, Tom Leggett, thank you so much for taking the time to come in and talk with me today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Everybody, the Franklin Street Bazaar is coming up in just a couple of months, so mark your calendars. What was the date again, Tom? It was the last Saturday.
Last Saturday, May.
Right. So let's see a big opening day turnout.
Thank you.
You can like and follow the Franklin Street Bazaar and find Tom's food truck group on Facebook and his food truck articles in News for You. Links are in the show notes. Food From Here is produced by Tri-State Public Media in Evansville, Indiana, home of WNIN-FM and WNIN-PBS. I'm Peggy Pirro. Thanks for listening.